7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
Yeah, they want to go back. Like I mentioned, as soon as ASR took over, they're trying to take everything we have, you know, pensions and whatnot. And I understand pensions. That's a thing, unfortunately, of the past, you know, unless your union is very strong. But to try to take more after that, like the medical benefits current. So people that are already retired, that have already signed their contract that guarantee the medical benefits until they're 90, I believe. They're trying to take that back and take away the benefits that the other 20 or so future retirees have for medical benefits.
Good memories are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, all down the...
Good morning, and welcome to another Working Week. This is KPFK's Working Voices. I'm your host, Joe Ayala, president of NABIT CWA Local 53.
And I'm your co-host, Marissa Remsky of CWA Local 9003.
And in this morning's show, Steve Zeltzer takes us to hear ILWU Local 6 workers at the Crockett, California CNH Sugar Refinery. Enrique Sanchez brings us a sample in Spanish from his latest Spanish United interview. Kristen Parker has this week's Education Workers Report Card on budget cuts and technology. And later, our associate producer, Hal Lohr, features housing, AI, and pollution with our latest Working Voices updates. All this and more coming up this morning on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. This is Working Voices.
In our first story this morning, from his labor video YouTube channel, Steve Zeltzer takes us to Crockett, California at the CNH Sugar Refinery, where nearly 100 ILWU Local 6 workers were forced out on strike when the company demanded major concessions on their health care, retirement, and union protections.
I would never walk across a picket line. Solidarity forever, don't mean just sometimes. Long live the union, cross my heart, hope to die. If I should ever walk across a picket line.
My name is Manny Loera. I've been at CNH for 11 years. I'm a belt foreman in the warehouse.
So what exactly is going on here?
We're fighting for some rights right now. The last negotiations went pretty poorly. The company wasn't budging on any of their takeaways. A lot of stuff happening right now, unfortunately. They're trying to change some language on overtime pay, to lose overtime after 8 hours and granted only after 40. They're also trying to take away medical benefits for current and future retirees, costing thousands of dollars out of pocket on people that are going to be on basically fixed incomes, correct? They're trying to change some language on sick days, so we lose out on some sick days, lose all progressive discipline on sick time. Right now, we have in our previous contract, we had a pretty good system to where we have counseling sessions if we miss too much work, and they kind of work with us. And now they're trying to change the language to where if we have two unexcused absences in a 12-month period, we're immediately terminated. So just a lot of negatives and no positives here. We're just trying to spread the word. We want to get back to the table. We all want to come back to work. And we're just out here fighting 24/7 for our rights. This company is CNH Sugar. It's here in Crockett. It's been here for about 115 years, I believe, 115 years. It's been in our union since it established ILWU in 1937. And for my information, that's the last time they had a strike was when it first initiated. So it's been about almost 90 years since they've had a strike. The warehouse has. There's other unions in the house, in the company. They've been on strike.
Who owns this company?
This is owned by ASR Group. It's some kind of conglomerate in the 90s, once in the early 2000s, I believe. And our warehouse union joined them on picket lines. So, you know, we fight in solidarity, and we're just trying to get the numbers out here. We're trying to get the voice so we can be heard and be taken seriously. They have many plants across the world, United States, and they bought CNH out, I believe, in 2006. And unfortunately, a lot has changed then. the first contract negotiations the warehouse had after the buyout, they got rid of our pension. They got rid of medical benefits for future, you know, hire-ons. So ever since they took over, you know, it's kind of been a bad look for the working class. And we're just trying to keep some of our rights and take them back if we can.
And they deliver product here, cane or other things? How does the product come in?
We get ships coming in on the raw sugar dock from raw sugar. It gets processed to our silos and finished into different kinds of sugar, granulated, brown, powdered. It goes throughout the whole plant. There's packaging operators, there's warehouse operators. We package the sugar, palletize it, and then we ship it out on trailers and all across the world, Costco, Walmart, it's all everything.
Big operation?
Huge operation, yeah. Yeah, it was a huge operation. Our union has about 90 people here, 90 employees here. That's just for the warehouse. We operate some, you know, shipping, raw dock, palletizing, sanitation. Otherwise, I believe there's about 100, 150 sugar workers here, plus countless engineers, corporate managers, supervisors. I believe the area is somewhere around 400 total.
And the other unions, is this picket strike sanctioned by the Labor Council?
It's sanctioned. It's sanctioned. And unfortunately, there was a memo by the company put out that the other union, the sugar workers, were going to honor and also strike with us when we walked out at noon last Monday. Unfortunately, some misinformation got out there and some communication issues where they had to backtrack. Still trying to communicate with their committee, their leadership, to try to figure out what's going on there. Like I said before, when they went on strike, we've honored their line. So we're trying to figure out what's going on to where they're not honoring ours currently. Hopefully we can get that settled this week or by next week at the latest, and we can have some more numbers out here and get our cause some more voices.
And what are the other unions inside?
There's
locals.
Yeah, there's SWU, Sugar Worker Union number one. They have, I want to say, maybe 150 employees. They're process operators, packaging operators, everything in between. And there's some electricians and some contractors that work here as well. I'm not sure who they're affiliated with, but there's a lot of union jobs in this plant.
What about Teamsters?
Teamsters come in and out right now. That's one right there, unfortunately. Cherokee Lines. Well, it's one other thing we're trying to get clarification on. It's probably 315, yeah, but I'm not too sure. I couldn't guarantee that that's information is correct. Trying to get some clarification still. There's some questions to be had, but last we heard is that they're non-union. They're union, but they're having non-union people come in right now to not honor a picket line. Whether that's true or not, I'm not too sure, but like I said, we're just trying to get our communication out there, make sure we cross our T's, dot our I's, and everything's under the right umbrella.
And have they brought in replacement workers to do your jobs?
They have.
Scabs?
They brought in many scabs. They bring them in by the shuttle. They're trying to operate forklifts and machinery that, unfortunately, they're probably not very well trained on. I don't want to speculate here, but we did see an ambulance and a fire truck here last Friday stretch somebody out. Hopefully nothing.
Was OSHA called?
I mean, I'm sure it's been reported. When the ambulance is involved, I'm sure it's been reported. I hope it has. We can investigate that ourselves, but hopefully nothing's too serious. But it's
dangerous.
Yeah.
It can be dangerous if you're not trained.
This is skilled labor where you need to be trained properly and have the years on these machines, on the inverters, on the palletizing machines, on the conveyor lines. And to try to get a group of people who aren't trained and try to do the job, it sounds a little reckless to me. I'm sure they have some kind of training program, but all the operators, we're out here. We're the experts, you know? So the fact that we're not there to train, that's pretty scary, scary thought.
And how did they prepare for this strike?
Yeah, we gave them 72-hour notice. And even before our negotiations were up, before our old contract expired, they had kind of started adding these fences and these barricades at the upper lot just in preparation. They did the same thing for SWU last year when they were working on their contract because they voted the contract out initially. So the company was kind of prepared. They had extra security in case anyone was going to try to sabotage things. They did the same thing this go around. Unfortunately, now that we're actually on strike, everything is shut off. They have barricades everywhere, plastic covering things so you can't see inside. And like I mentioned before, they're shuttling all the employees in from different locations just to get them in without, you know, any conflict or hearing our story, our side.
And 1937, the last time you went on strike, that was following the general strike in 1934. It seems they want to go back.
Yeah, they want to go back. Like I mentioned, as soon as ASR took over, they're trying to take everything we have, you know, pensions and whatnot. And I understand pensions. That's a thing, unfortunately, of the past, you know, unless your union is very strong. But to try to take more after that, like the medical benefits current. So people that are already retired, that have already signed their contract that guarantee the medical benefits until they're 90, I believe, they're trying to take that back and take away the benefits that the other 20 or so future retirees have for medical benefits. So that's taking benefits away from them, their spouses, you know, their families, people who are going to be on fixed incomes, right? As everyone knows, health insurance is tough. Gets a lot
people of people are dying because they can't get health care.
People are dying because they can't get health care. And last thing we want is for an emergency to happen and your life savings to go away because the company doesn't want to support you or honor their word.
What kind of solidarity do you have? Are people, I know there are a lot of horns. People are.
A lot of horns. Like I said, we've been out here since last Monday at noon. That's when we walked out. And every day since, we have local community supporting us, dropping off goods for us, foods, waters, drinks, ice chest. Everyone's honking in solidarity. We made sure we're on the same page with everyone that lives locally to make sure, you know, we're here to fight, but not to be on their nerves. And they said, make as much noise as you want. They support the local community. They support us because
this is a working class community.
This is a working class community. This is a company town. When this town first came in, CNH owned all the houses. They put the people in the houses, right? So they know what it's like, how much CNH means, and they know we bust our butts 12 hours a day, every day, 12 on, 2 off at minimum. And they know they want to see us back at work. A lot of us live in this town. You know, a lot of us live in this town. We want to keep supporting it. We want CNH to do well and keep supporting the ventures in this town.
Are they a profitable company?
They're a very profitable company. I couldn't give you the numbers. I've heard, I don't want to misspeak, but I've heard a little over $1 billion in profits last year. Now, don't quote me on this. I'm a foreman, right? I'm just a foreman here, but I'm sure the numbers are readily available.
So they're making a lot of money, but they want more, obviously.
Yep, they want
off your back.
Take more away from us so they can get more in their pockets. Yep.
So what can people do who want to support you in the Bay Area? I mean, these companies apparently are buying this product. I mean, it's scab product now.
Yeah, you know, the companies buying, people are buying the product. You know, CNH, unfortunately, they process a lot of sugar for Walmart and their private labels. So really, honestly, just spread the word. We have a strike fund that goes towards our food, our, you know, canopy, shelter, whatever we need, and spread the word, you know, try to get local union members, local officials on board. We've had people from Congressman Garamendi's office come a few days last week. They're trying to get us connected with the right channels, and that's going to be the biggest thing, I believe.
And it seems like these companies, techno-fascists, the billionaires, they want to get rid of labor. Is that part of the plan?
They want to get rid of labor. They want everything AI. They want everything automated. They want to keep us sick. It's a very unfortunate thing, and we're just trying to fight, stay together, and stay strong.
Is the union pretty strong here?
The union has been pretty strong here. We've had some pretty good rights. You know, we get a lot of protections. We have a lot of support, even with management. You know, we have great relationship with supervisors, managers, and stuff. You know, knowing their kids, coming to our houses, stuff like that. You know, they don't want us out here. They want us back at work, too. And we want to be back at work. And hopefully, they can get back to the table soon and make something like that happen.
Your medical benefits, you're going to lose them in
just for being on strike, yeah. You know, I think we're covered until the end of July based on the hours we worked in June. But after July 31st, we're probably going to be out of luck here. We're gonna have no.
And your families, if there's cancer, if there's health problems.
Yeah, I mean, we all have children. We all have families and dependents. And that's just going to put more strain. We're already not getting paid right. And it's not have benefits on top of it. You know, it's going to put more strain on all 90 of our families. So.
And cost of living. In the Bay Area.
Don't get me started. Cost of living, you know, it's crazy. Gas is crazy. Bridge tolls rise every year. Everyone knows. We're all dealing with the same problems, unfortunately. And just to have a profitable company trying to take more and more away and keep us down at the bottom of the totem pole, it's frustrating. It's a shame.
My name is Miriam Ignacio.
And how long have you worked? You're a member of ILW Local 6.
For this company, 7 months.
So that's a short period.
Very short period.
Did they try to get you to continue to work?
Yes, they did. They sent us a letter. And it said, if you come back to work on a particular day, I can't remember exact date, but it said, if you come back from the date that they put on the letter, it would give us $1,000 bonus. Once this strike was over, it wasn't going to be an immediate. It was going to be given to you once the strike is over. And depending on what day you started back, then they would, you know, give it to you. But if you waited like till the following week or the week after that, then it would be taken, you know, portions off. So it wouldn't be a full 1,000. It would be less than that.
So they were trying to bribe you?
Yes.
Didn't work?
No.
Why not?
Not worth it for me. Definitely not. I'm sticking with my team, with all my brothers and sisters for the union. And I'm not a regular worker either. I'm a casual.
So you're just a casual, but you're supporting them.
Yes, I am.
You're listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
What's the starting wage here for a casual?
I'm not really sure. I got hired in an abundance of need that they had. So they kind of had an extra special deal going on when I got hired. So I'm not really sure. I've heard it's different from what I started as, because I started as a step two, because it works by steps here. It's a level steps. So it's like level one, level two. And I got hired as a level two.
And what do you think about this company? It seems like they have a lot of money. They're making a lot of profits, yet they want to take away from workers here.
Oh, yes, they do. They have a lot of money. And a lot of, this is the only sugar company, you know, in California. So they have, and they provide to Costco, all the big companies. So I'm pretty sure they have a ton of money. But, you know, in reality, they shouldn't be doing what they're doing, because there's no need for it. But right now, they've hired like so much extra security to come watch us. They put up fences. They've spent all this excess money, rented buses, brought outside people from, like, I heard Baltimore, and all that money they're spending, but not work out a contract, a fair contract with us. It doesn't make any sense.
So they're spending a lot of money, more than the contract would cost to take on the union.
In my point of view, yes.
And what does that say about the owners that they would do this?
I think it's, to me, really unfair, and really, it's kind of amazing to me that 5 days ago we were your workers, and now it feels like we're your enemies. It's like, it puts me in a like position where it's like so awkward. Like, all of a sudden we're being treated like we're enemies, and we're like just random people, which we were just 5 days ago your employees.
Gregory Medley.
And Gregory, how long have you worked at CNH?
48 years.
And is this your first strike?
This is the first one the ILWU has been, but there's been strikes with the sugar workers, which we honored their picket lines.
And why do you think that they're forcing you to take concessions? They want you to give concessions on your health care. They want to take money away from your retirees. What are the issues that brought you out here?
Those right there. They want to take money from the health care and retirees, which after being here 48 years, I'm close to retiring myself. The health care for the spouses. I have a 90-year-old mom. My dad worked here, and my 90-year-old mom, she's under the health care plan also.
So they would hurt.
Yes, yes.
The cost of health care, people are having trouble even making it, you know.
People are having trouble making it through everything, and then you take away the health care, that's even worse.
And did they prepare for the strike, or the replacement workers or scabs? How did they prepare for the strike?
I'm not sure how they prepared for the strike, but I know I've been seeing buses going in and out. I don't know what the situation is with the company. I don't know how they prepared for the strike, other than the fences and the barriers I see.
And you think this is part of what's going on in this country? These big companies basically want to get rid of the unions. They don't believe in unions.
Definitely part of what's going on throughout our whole country. Yes. These large companies don't believe in the union, but the union has worked for me for 48 years. It worked for my family, so I'm still part of it.
And have the workers in there said that they want to support you? What's going on? And because apparently they're not supporting you right now.
Getting mixed stories on that. I think the company paid them a small bonus to go in of $1,000, and they bussing them in through the back way.
And this plant is supplied by ships?
Yes.
And are these ships going to continue to come to supply?
No, because ILWU Local 10, they have refused to unload the ships. And I believe we have ships out in the water now that need to be unloaded. So, that won't be happening. Local 10, ILWU is a strong union also.
And this union came about as following the general strike in 1934. when there was a general strike in, of the longshore workers on the West Coast. You think it's relevant today, that period when unions were being built and you had a general strike that helped form the ILWU? I mean, they were successful getting a union hiring hall. And the period that we're in now, they want to take away those things.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, I don't think that strike then is relevant to what we're going through today just because of the size of the unions. There were a lot more union members then, although we do have a strong amount of members now. But back then, there were a lot more union members, a lot more union jobs.
And do many members work, live in Crockett here in the community?
No. We have a few, but most people live out of town.
And they have to commute.
They have to commute, correct.
People can't afford houses.
Right, right. Well, we're talking about a lot of people live in Solano County and of course, Contra Costa County also.
And the conditions of the ILWU, it sounds like those are good conditions and something you want to protect. And to have a non-union situation, what would it be like in a non-union situation?
Well, I don't even want to think what it'd be like in a non-union situation. We want to keep what we have.
And is there solidarity among the community, among supporters here?
Yeah, from what I hear, I was talking to a business agent, and he said the community is certainly behind us with this strike. So, yeah, there's solidarity definitely in the community.
Are you getting strike pay?
No. No.
are you prepared for a long strike if they decide to hold out?
Well, you know, that's yet to be determined. Hopefully we go to the table soon, and then we'll have to dip into some funds and continue.
Okay, so why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Cesar Garibay. I'm the business agent with ILWU Local 6.
And this strike, how long has it been going on?
About a week now, as of today. We went out Monday at around noon.
And they're trying to take away from your contract? Is that what the issue is?
Yes, they're trying to take away the seniority, people's overtime, the retirees who have earned their medical, their retiree medical. A lot of folks don't have it, but we want to make sure the people who earn it are ready to keep it. We don't want that being taken away from them, and that's a big cost there.
And apparently they're bringing in replacements, scabs, spending money to try to replace you?
Yes, they have been bringing in buses full of people. Bringing them through the railroad tracks where it's unsafe for them, and now they're starting bringing them around, trying to avoid us. So they're going around a different direction. But it all comes down to them. They're going to bust out. They're going to bust with scabs. Yeah, we're replacement workers.
The support of labor. I know this is if they defeat you, the other unions will probably be threatened as well.
Yes. Well, everybody so far, all the other unions been supportive of ILWU Local 6.
And this, I understand the last strike was in 1937?
There was one, in 2003, where the sugar workers went out and the warehouse went out in support of them.
Oh, so you supported the sugar workers, yes, when they went out in 2000. How long was that strike?
I wasn't involved. I believe it was about a week. And the warehouse went out right behind them in support of them to make sure they got what they wanted.
And if everyone went out here, probably the strike would last shorter.
Correct. It would be. But that's something both unions are working on now, trying to communicate and find out what's holding them up.
And the state of union busting, I understand this company's making a lot of profits.
This is a multi-million dollar company. They have deep pockets to do what they want.
So and they're spending it now to try to get rid of the union.
Yes, they have plenty of people out here. They have all kinds of people trying to make sure that they can break us.
And what kind of solidarity do you have in your members? Are all your members out?
All our members are here. All three shifts are being covered. So everybody's just, they're in here trying to make sure we win this fight.
I would never walk across a picket line. Solidarity forever, don't mean just sometimes. Long live the union, cross my heart, and hope to die. If I should ever walk across a picket line.
That was Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel. For more videos and insights from Steve Zeltzer, you can go to his Labor Video YouTube channel. Or now you can find him at the Production of Labor Video Project on the web at labormedia.net. 'Cause nowhere is-
be safe in this world of change. Consent is manufactured through bigotry and rage. So billionaires and fascists can rule without a fight. But their will can be broken if the people unite. But their will can be broken if the people unite.
Next up, Working Voices contributor Enrique Sanchez brings us this sample in Spanish from his latest Spanish United interview.
Hola y buenas noches y bienvenido a Spanish United Radio. Soy el locutor Enrique Sánchez, fundador y director de Spanish United. En esta noche tenemos un invitado especial. ¿Tú puedes introducirte al audiencia, por favor?
Me llamo Edwin Ortiz, soy el presidente de la iniciativa de Puerto Rico y España.
Bienvenido, Edwin, al programa.
Muchas gracias.
Sí, nosotros en Spanish United somos un movimiento que además de ser hispanista, también somos una fundación que ayudamos a la comunidad latina en los intereses de educación, ayudar a las personas de bajos recursos, hacer cartas si necesitan una recomendación o algo legal, etcétera. Y también estamos por la unificación de Puerto Rico con España. Yo soy puertorriqueño también, mi mamá es de la isla. So, explica un poco del movimiento que eres presidente y habla de tu reciente visita al UN.
Sí, cómo no. Bueno, soy otra vez Edwin Ortiz, presidente de la iniciativa de Puerto Rico-España. Es una organización nacional y básicamente es una organización que se trata de educar, informar y ayudar a las personas a entender más o menos de la historia de Puerto Rico. O sea, no tanto como la historia, como también el presente de los temas ocurriendo en la isla y también en cuestión de la comunidad puertorriqueña en el diáspora también. El propósito es muy grande, pero varias personas están envueltas. El movimiento está creciendo más y más cada día. En estos momentos estamos bregando, o digo yo, trabajando en varias iniciativas. La iniciativa más grande es para que el gobierno del Estados Unidos pongan un referéndum, un plebiscito, al fin que vaya a ser vinculante, tiene que vaya a ser uno que en realidad va a valer el voz de la comunidad latina o la comunidad puertorriqueña, digo yo. Uh-huh. En todo sentido, muchas personas no saben que los 7 plebiscitos que la isla ha tenido han sido todo organizados por el gobierno de Puerto Rico. O sea que el gobierno federal, el Congreso, nunca ha hecho ni un plebiscito que ellos van a considerar para decidir el estado de Puerto Rico. Entonces, a través de nuestra organización, nosotros trabajamos con las personas para que, con los políticos, informándoles la importancia de esto y que a la misma vez se pueda empujar para que Puerto Rico pueda reunificarse otra vez con España como la autonomía en la que tenía en 1897. Uh-huh. Y te pido disculpas porque estoy en el aeropuerto. Apenas más temprano salimos de la ONU a hacer nuestra presentación en frente de la delegación y los líderes de varios países. Que se trata de la reunificación de Puerto Rico en España. Ahí estaban los otros puertorriqueño con el estatus de estadidad, independencia, el estado que tenemos ahora. Cada grupo estaba representando a lo que ellos están apoyando.
Yo me acuerdo cuando yo fui expuesto al movimiento fue en el 2016, cuando José Neves Seisels fue el primero que habló de Puerto Rico regresando a España. Yo hice una entrevista con él hace muchos años. Y yo creo que sería una opción, you know, para la isla, porque Puerto Rico es el colonia más viejo que existe en el siglo XXI, you know, más de 120 años, y es el único territorio colonia que en sí no tiene autonomía ni tampoco puede tener el mismo derechos como las personas.
That was a sample in Spanish from Enrique Sanchez and his latest interview on the Spanish United YouTube. For more from Enrique Sanchez, you can find Spanish United on the web at their WIXCITE.com homepage.
'Cause nowhere is safe in this world of change. Consent is manufactured through bigotry and rage. So billionaires and fascists can rule without a fight. But their will can be broken if the people unite. But their will can be broken if the people unite.
This is Gary Oldman. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
Kristen Parker's Education Workers Report Card looks at how LAUSD's fiscal stabilization plan will eventually mean painful job cuts and the new bans on computer learning technology in LA classrooms.
Numbers, letters, learn to spell, nouns and books, show and tell. Playtime, we will throw the ball and back to class, through the hall. The teacher marks our head against the wall. Teacher marks our hide against the wall.
This is Kristen Parker with the Montebello Teachers Association for Working Voices. In this morning's report card, the Los Angeles Unified School District Board approved a nearly $21 billion spending plan Tuesday for the next school year. LAUSD's budget includes salary increases for teachers, support staff, and administrators, but raises questions about how the district will retain those employees with planned cuts in the coming years. The board voted unanimously to adopt the 2026-27 budget a week after approving a cost savings plan that will likely result in the elimination of thousands of jobs. What's in the budget? The district's $20.6 billion budget is divided among different accounts. The largest by far is the $12 billion general fund, which accounts for the majority of the salaries and money for day-to-day school operations. About 40% of the general fund is considered restricted because it's required to go toward a specific purpose, such as the education of students with disabilities or toward low-income communities. The unrestricted portion, about $7.4 billion, includes money for teachers, administrators, and other educator salaries, tutoring, transportation, and classroom supplies, with more than 80% of this money paying district employees. There is also about $4 billion in capital project funds for school construction and renovation projects. Voter-approved bonds generate the money for these projects, and it cannot be shifted to pay for salaries or other school needs. The remainder of the budget is for relatively smaller items like food service, adult education, and debt. The plan adopted largely matched what was presented last week, with an exception where the board voted to restore $25 million in funding to external after-school programs. The new spending plan is nearly 10% larger than the budget adopted last year and exceeds the amount of revenue the district expects to bring in by $2 billion, and the district will, for the third consecutive year, pay the difference with reserves. This is the second year the district has adopted a fiscal stabilization plan at the request of the Los Angeles County Office of Education. The fiscal stabilization plan is meant to show what factors are straining the budget and include strategies to reduce spending, increase revenue, and temporarily spend reserves or one-time funding. The elimination of more than 650 jobs in May was one consequence of last year's plan. This year's fiscal stabilization plan proposes cutting $3.5 billion additional dollars over the next 3 years. It strips $500 million from the district's signature equity program, the Student Equity Needs Index, which funnels money to schools with greater perceived needs. LAUSD staff has said the fiscal stabilization plan will likely result in thousands of layoffs in the coming years, though job cuts will require further board votes.
Numbers, letters, learn to spell, nouns and books, show and tell. Playtime, we will throw the ball and back to class, through the hall. The teacher marks our head against the wall.
We've seen a lot of students, you know, sitting on their school-issued devices and just scrolling on YouTube or literally gambling or looking at pornography or, you know, getting on the wide open internet while they're supposed to be learning. So kids are very distracted in class because they're sitting on these devices. And also it's very bad for their health to be staring at a screen instead of at their teacher. So there's kind of a lot of issues at play there. Having students on devices harms their learning.
It's now official. The LAUSD will ban classroom computer screen time before second grade and has enacted limited use and take-home computers for older students. Under a policy approved last Tuesday by the school board that reflects growing backlash from anti-tech parents and educators who are concerned about a perceived growing reliance on computers and technology in K-12 learning. In line with Trump administration dictates, Schools Beyond Screens acts as a national coalition pushing for limits in California and nationwide, claiming parents have become alarmed over how digital activities are replacing traditional learning and peer interaction. So, in a move that was opposed as well as supported by LA's working-class parents and teachers, beginning in August, district guidelines will prohibit in-school screen time from preschool through first grade. It will restrict daily screen time to 20 minutes, including homework assignments, in second and third grade, and 30 minutes in fourth and fifth grade beginning in November. Middle school students will be limited to 1 hour of screen time spread throughout the week in each class, for a total of 6 hours weekly to account for a variety of class schedules. The time will increase to 1.5 hours for high school students and is not to exceed 10 hours a week. And in a move that will directly remove a valuable learning tool from many financially struggling households, students will also no longer be given a school computer to take home every day. LAUSD, on the other hand, will use computer-based systems to monitor the new policy with new software that will allow it to track screen time minutes across its devices. LAUSD's action to devise new limits in April spurred interest in the issue across the nation, said Jody Carrion, who co-runs the California chapter of the Distraction-Free Schools Policy Project, a leader in the movement. Signatures on education technology petitions nationwide skyrocketed following LAUSD's decision, according to data from the parents' rights-based petition company, 4Norms. States including Alabama and Utah have sought to implement statewide limits on screen time by age level, and others have sought to more thoroughly vet educational technology. Still, technology can be helpful to learning if it is used and designed intentionally. LAUSD's new policy calls for prioritizing teacher-led instruction over using edtech platforms for learning. The district is now turning to face-to-face tutoring, for example, that will be teacher-led. Computer learning will, in essence, turn somewhat retro with classes using alternative options such as laptop carts or computer lab models. One exception to the daily screen time limits will be periodic online standardized state and district tests such as iReady. And many LA families were opposed to the district's decision to implement strict screen time guidelines, calling for balance so that students with limited access to technology could still obtain and learn to use computers. Citing something that often proves true when public officials react to political fashions, where sometimes a policy that has the intention of helping maybe has consequences that can harm children, especially for students in low-income, working-class families. Although members of the parent-led Schools Beyond Screens applauded the policy, they expressed concern over the district's decision to increase screen time for second through fifth graders. And speakers pushed the board to implement a moratorium on the use of generative artificial intelligence in the classroom. Currently, students 13 and older are permitted to use technology, but some want to stop its use entirely while the district's AI committee creates new guidelines. Citing as a victory a move that could potentially put students at a disadvantage in a world where China is now mandating AI studies in school, even New York City has pushed for a moratorium on artificial intelligence as the public school system figures out more rigorous guardrails for its use in the classroom. This is Kristen Parker with the Montebello Teachers Association for KPFK's Working Voices.
Numbers, letters, learn to spell, nouns and books, show and tell. Playtime, we will throw the ball in, back to class, through the hall. The teacher marks our height against the wall. The teacher marks our height against the wall.
That was Kristen Parker with this morning's Education Workers Report Card.
What our labor is worth, that's why we often in the days on the way to our work, and when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about. And now we never get paid what our labor is worth, that's why we often in the days on the way to our work, and when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
And finally, from the KPFK News Desk, Associate Producer Hal Lohr brings us the latest labor news with this morning's Working Voices Update.
The representative from California has the floor.
Sing out to the resident gas man. Pumped away is your punishment.
Thanks, Marissa. You know, as if LA's homeless crisis wasn't complicated enough for you, as of last week, the Trump administration has barred Los Angeles County's main homelessness agency from accessing federal funds while it supposedly investigates the agency's alleged wanton mismanagement of public funds. The move puts at risk almost $200 million that LA area service providers count on to help California's largest poor and homeless populations. In a letter Thursday to the Los Angeles Homeless Service Authority, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development accused the L.A. agency of fraud while also blaming it for failing to decrease homelessness, claiming the agency failed to record when people left their motel housing, misused government money by using it to pay for services provided under another contract, and could not provide documents to prove the existence of homes it was responsible for, according to HUD. The LA agency is suspended from participating in federal funding competitions until HUD's Office of Inspector General completes its investigation, which virtually guarantees that federal funding for homelessness shelters in LA will not be a thing for the foreseeable future. The Los Angeles Homeless Service Authority is a joint city-county agency that has spearheaded the LA area's fight against homelessness since the 1990s. It has faced a myriad of issues recently, resulting even in local officials pulling their confidence and their money from the agency. After two critical audits found the Homeless Service Authority wasn't properly tracking its spending or outcomes, the LA County Board of Supervisors withdrew its money and moved it to a newly created county agency. But despite that turmoil, the Homeless Services Authority is still officially the LA region's lead homelessness agency, and it receives federal homelessness funding on behalf of the city, county, and nonprofit service providers. Last year, the authority received nearly $200 million in federal funds through the Continuum of Care program, the largest source of federal homelessness funding. So blocking that funding jeopardizes the work the authority has already done to fight homelessness by putting thousands of formerly homeless people back on the streets. LA Mayor Karen Bass said that while she shares HUD's concerns about the homeless authority, but threatening its funding does nothing to house people. And homelessness actually started improving recently in LA County, with the number of homeless people dropping in 2024 and 2025, according to the point in time count. As of last year, there were an estimated 72,000 unhoused people in the county. Even so, the Trump administration has been openly attempting to defund the way LA and other places across California address homelessness. The administration wants to move funds from permanent housing into temporary shelters and prioritize housing programs that require sobriety. And earlier this month, HUD opened this year's application for federal homelessness funding via the Continuum of Care program, which laid out these changes. The National Alliance to End Homelessness estimates those changes could cost California nearly $238 million in funding for permanent housing, which could mean nearly 15,000 people would lose their homes. California sued over a prior attempt by the Trump administration to make similar changes, but that case is still ongoing. Looking at the Port of Long Beach for a moment, in a move our Teamster brothers and sisters are sure to have an opinion on, the Port of Long Beach signed an agreement last Monday committing to a zero-emission trucking route from the Central Valley to the San Pedro Bay. In a move meant to counter Long Beach's worst-in-the-nation shoreline air pollution problem from oil refineries, the twin seaports, and the highways used to transport goods in what locals have dubbed the Diesel Death Corridor, an agreement was signed alongside the wonderful company's real estate arm, which agreed to include charging stations in its multi-million dollar logistics center near Bakersfield and Lincoln Transportation Services, which recently ordered 300 newly built electric trucks. And the first 50 to 70 semis should arrive this month. Long Beach Port CEO Noel Hasegawa said there is strong momentum around new EV truck models, where some are capable of a 325 to 500 mile range and can charge to 60% within 30 minutes. Other companies like Long Beach-based Watt EV have also put orders forward for the new EV semis and have trucks expected to hit the road this year. And about 200 of these models are already reserved through the Seaport Truck Voucher Program. But despite the massive investment, it still pales in comparison to the industry's reliance on fossil fuels. More than 18,000 trucks are registered to move cargo through the city seaport, overwhelmingly fueled by diesel. Currently, only 654 trucks are zero emission, according to port officials. Diesel fumes contribute to well-documented health problems like childhood asthma in neighborhoods near the port and warehouses, and studies have shown that those affected are disproportionately low income and people of color. A lot of hesitation to convert fleets, though, rests on the lack of charging stations along truck routes. As of last year, California has more than 16,000 electric chargers dotted across its highways, about a tenth of the estimated 157,000 chargers that California energy officials say are needed to support its requirement that new heavy-duty vehicles must be all electric by 2035. As part of the agreement, the port and either company will help create a plan to invest in clean energy infrastructure at either end of the major trade route, which needs far more charging stations and warehouse capability of accommodating electrified semis. Each year, more than 300,000 TEUs, a standard measurement for shipping containers, move between the port complex and the Southern Central Valley, a roughly 150-mile route with few charging stations. So the wonderful company is looking to include charging stations and other new amenities as part of an expansion of its wonderful logistics center in Shafter, a small farmland community 18 miles north of Bakersfield. The company also plans for a $120 million inland rail terminal located along the BNSF railway main line, expected to be completed in early 2027, and a new highway called the Central Valley Green Pass, which will divert trucks from Central Shafter onto major highways. Each organization say they will spend time advocating to the industry and public on the benefits of the plan, with the hope of eventually encouraging other truck and warehouse companies to agree to make similar greener arrangements. This comes years after the city seaport joined a green shipping corridor alongside Los Angeles, Shanghai, and Singapore. Just a Working Voices FYI, LA is home to more than 2,000 active oil wells, and in an effort to actually help poor and working class people, the Los Angeles City Council last Tuesday unanimously advanced an ordinance to halt new oil and gas drilling and phase out all existing production over the next 20 years. The measure revives a similar ban passed in 2022, which was struck down by a judge following legal challenges from the oil and gas industry. Now, it must pass a second vote before final adoption later this summer and would make LA the largest city in the United States to phase out existing oil wells. The ban in 2022 was seen as a historic move for a region built on the petroleum industry, but in 2024, an LA County Superior Court judge invalidated the law, ruling that the state, not the city, has jurisdiction over petroleum production. The legal challenge was brought by oil companies including Warren Resources, which operates a large oil field in Wilmington. Shortly after the LA judge invalidated the LA ordinance, state legislators advanced Assembly Bill 2333, which reaffirms city and county authority to regulate oil and gas activity. It was largely seen as the missing piece that made the original ordinance vulnerable. The new ordinance, written by the Department of City Planning, prohibits new oil and gas extraction, including drilling, re-drilling, or deepening existing wells for the purpose of production. It also designates all existing and active idle wells as non-conforming uses, meaning they may only operate during the phase-out period and are no longer compliant with current zoning. Warren Resources, which led the lawsuit against the previous ban, had argued that the 2022 ban was rushed and would lead to more oil imports to the area, causing increased emissions from tankers and trucks and other environmental consequences. And yeah, that didn't happen. And none of that argument justified why so many wells in the city operate near schools, homes, parks, and most are concentrated in low-income areas and communities of color, such as Wilmington and the Harbor District, West LA, and South LA. Districts where residents have long reported respiratory issues, headaches, throat irritation, and other health problems, while studies have found oil wells can emit carcinogens and are linked to many adverse health effects. Ashley Hernandez, a Wilmington resident and organizer with the nonprofit Communities for a Better Environment, said bloody noses and noxious fumes were a regular part of life in the neighborhood growing up. She noted that in addition to oil drilling, LA residents continue to face other environmental hazards, such as the recent oil pipeline rupture that sent crude into the LA River, or the ongoing cold storage warehouse fire in Boyle Heights that spewed toxic smoke, all showing a need for our city to protect our families now and to stop the oil industry's reign of power in Los Angeles. As the California struggle over AI continued back in April, developers of the massive Imperial Data Center cleared a major hurdle after Imperial County supervisors approved a plan to combine several tracts of land for a nearly 1 million square foot facility in rural Southern California. It would be the largest data center in California, and the parent company, known as Imperial Valley Computer Manufacturing LLC, described it as a hyperscale facility designed exclusively for advanced artificial intelligence and machine learning operations. But the week before last, that progress came to a halt when the county board walked back its decision, declaring a 45-day moratorium on data centers and forming a public commission to advise the county on zoning policy for the facility. Their reversal came after months of backlash and a more than hour-long public hearing in which residents voiced sharply criticisms of the sweeping project and its swift approval. Then, last week, the developer, Sebastian Rucci, said he's filing a lawsuit to seek a temporary restraining order against the moratorium, arguing that the county failed to show any true emergency or explain what harms and impacts it will cause and what specific concerns residents have raised. The conflict over the massive facility reflects the push to build infrastructure for the mushrooming artificial intelligence industry and Californians' growing unease with its effects on air quality, water, energy, traffic, and more. Imperial Valley Computer Manufacturing LLC promises that it will produce 2,500 construction jobs, 100 permanent jobs, and generate $72.5 million in a one-time sales tax and $28.7 million in annual taxes. But many residents and local leaders worry the public health, environmental, and economic costs to their rural working-class communities could outweigh those benefits. This year, the city of Imperial filed a lawsuit challenging the data center's review under the California Environmental Quality Act, known as CEQA, and the local voters are gathering signatures for a referendum to ban data centers in the county. But Imperial Valley Computer Manufacturing LLC claims their project is permitted under existing zoning for industrial use and doesn't require further environmental review. So the controversy over the Imperial Data Center is playing out in similar battles across California, where other planned tech facilities are meeting community pushback and watchdog groups are seeking disclosure of their effects. And some voters want to take data centers off the table entirely. Earlier this month, Monterey Park became the first U.S. city to pass a moratorium on data centers fueled by months of controversy over a planned project. More on this in days to come.
And that's our show for this week. Once again, we're asking our labor partners, locals, and regional officers to seriously consider underwriting this show, because Working Voices and KPFK could really use your support. So please contact the station at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org to explore the possibilities. We need to hear from you. You can also email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com. Please contribute if you can at 818-985-5735. Once again, this is Joe Ayala, president of David CWA Local 53.
And this is Marissa Remsky of CWA Local 9003.
Our thanks to Dan McCrory, Steve Zeltzer, Gary Scott, Kristen Parker, Enrique Sanchez, Hal Lohr, and all our guests. Please continue to give what you can to keep us going. Remember, we're in this together. And of course, always remember to educate, agitate, and organize. Have a good week, everybody.
Got so much work, yeah, yeah. Work, work, yeah. Work, work.
What's going on, family? From the Bay to L.A., my name is Kat Brooks. My show, Law and Disorder, is now on KPFK. Cutting-edge interviews with organizers, culture workers, newsmakers, and freedom fighters. The weekly state terror roundup, resistance in residence with artists using their gifts to change the world, and letters from the inside. That's just a small taste of what this show is about as we seek to expose, agitate, and build. Tune in Monday through Thursday at 8 a.m. on 90.7 or at kpfk.org.
Give a gift to KPFK and yourself when you let us take your unwanted vehicle off your hands. Not only will your donation help support the on-air programs our community relies on every day, but you even qualify for a tax deduction. Go to kpfk.org/cars or call 877-573-5288. That's 1-877-KPFK-AUTO to learn more.
You're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.